Warning: this podcast contains descriptions of murder, assault, and explicit language that some may find disturbing or upsetting. Viewer discretion is advised. Murderous Literature presents Killer News. Hello, I'm your host Porter Hymas and my co-host January Blackwell. In these special episodes, we'll be looking at murderous literature in the form of news articles surrounding the events of modern-day serial killers and giving you updates about serial killers of the past. As the media saying goes, if it bleeds, it leads. And this saying has given rise to the fame of killers such as Ted Bundy, Jeffrey Dahmer, and Jack the Ripper. But have you ever heard of Murray Travis, Ronald Dominique, or Elizabeth Wetlofter? Most people probably haven't. Ever since the turn of the 21st century, the media doesn't cover serial killers as heavily as they once did. Some people don't even think about that much about modern-day serial killers and how they still operate among us to this day. And so, for those curious about the modern-day killers around us, we are making it easy for you to stay up to date with the scoop on the serial killers of today's news. And now, we take you to today's killer story.
In the winter of 2012, a coffee shop barista was kidnapped while closing down the coffee stand she worked at in Midtown Anchorage. It was then Alaskan law enforcement came face to face with serial killer Israel Keyes for the first time. FBI arrested him in the disappearance and murder of Samantha Koenig. And for the next 7 months, he would play a cat and mouse game with investigators, divulging clues about his other victims. CBS's 48 Hours got a first look at evidence in the case and how the FBI is still investigating and trying to bring closure to possibly dozens of families who don't know if their missing loved ones might have crossed paths with a serial killer. FBI agent said Keyes had what he called kill caches placed around the country.
We have the silencer for the .22. We have a wood stock for a .22, a plastic stock for a .22, a portion of a .22 rifle, and then we have the drum magazine. The .22
that had a number of .22 caliber bullets.
That's correct.
You ever seen anything like this in your career?
No.
The cache used in the courier attack has never been found, but Keyes told the FBI where they could find this, a weapon he had used in Vermont.
This is a silencer that he's actually constructed himself.
With his murderous tools in hand, Keyes went hunting for victims and found himself outside the courier house.
I decided I was going to look for a house with a couple in it. I was looking for a fairly easy way to get into the garage, and theirs was the first house I found that had all those things.
He just happens to take a walk from his hotel into a neighborhood, and this unsuspecting couple just living their lives is about to have a monster at their door.
Yeah.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to today's episode of Killer News. As you have gathered from the audio clip that has just been played, today we are covering the new information that has been released on the CBS true crime program 48 Hours surrounding Israel Keyes. He is kind of a more recent-ish serial killer. They speculate that his criminal record goes back to the late 1990s when he tried to abduct a woman. And he was a very nomadic serial killer, traveling all across the country, similar to Samuel Little, who also had the same similar lifestyle as basically a drifter. Occasionally, most of the time, somewhat, I don't know, going and abducting and killing people basically at random in order to satisfy his dark hedonistic fantasies that he had. He was apprehended in 2012 due to a kidnapping in Anchorage, Alaska, of a barista. This was captured on security camera footage, which is actually available online on YouTube if you can find it and are curious. He has also been connected to at least three other murders, one in Vermont and another one in New York as well. After committing the abduction in Anchorage, Alaska in 2012, he was soon after that apprehended due to the authorities tracking the victim's either debit card or credit card, one of the two, and they found an ATM where they tracked his rental card due to the camera footage and arrested him. He did admit to the other three murders. He also described that during the time he was roaming, he'd prepare these kill caches, as he recalled, where he put supplies in order to commit murders, usually weapons and ammunition and restraining type things, and bury them in case he ever wanted to come back and commit a murder. This has been observed by a few other killers, specifically the organized types. Dennis Rader, the BTK killer in Wichita, Kansas, did pretty much the same thing, except he didn't need to bury them because he wasn't nomadic, he was territorial, and it was just all in his personal possession. Although he did stash his trophies in a chicken coop at one of his either parents' or grandparents' ranch or farm or house. However, he was never prosecuted because he committed suicide in prison, which for a serial killer is actually quite rare to do either before or after you're apprehended, is to commit suicide. Very, very few serial killers will actually do that. There's a few exceptions. Of course, being Israel Keyes right here, also Fred West from Britain, and I believe Harold Shipman, also in the UK, both committed suicide when they were apprehended. But it's very uncommon for that to happen with serial killers. They're just mostly too afraid, which is ironic considering that they kill people for enjoyment, but it's themselves that they can't, so. The human mind is full of little idiosyncrasies, I guess, and contradictions. But anyway, now that you have a brief background of Israel Keyes, in this 48 hours episode, this may come as a shock to most of you, but I don't really watch 48 hours. It's just not my jam, which seems weird considering I'm making a true crime podcast and I'm talking about serial killers regularly for just no real monetary motivations for this podcast, just for the enjoyment of it. But I did come across this article talking about it, and you can watch this full episode if you haven't already, on one of the article links in the episode description. But basically, in this whole episode, they detail his crimes, and they also release new evidence about Israel Keyes, specifically one of his kill caches where he has weapons and even a homemade silencer, as well as 11 drawings of human skulls, along with the sentence "We are one" or something like that, in what is believed to be his own blood, which was found hidden in his cell, I believe underneath his bed, after which he committed suicide. And there are 11 of them, and investigators believe that they all represent one of his victims, 11 in total. There may be more, there may be less, it may be straight up 11. We currently don't know, as the investigation is still open. In fact, we may never know. But the FBI is releasing this information to the public, hoping that they can get new information. This strategy has worked plenty of times before. It worked in the Unabomber case with Ted Kaczynski. And it does bring a whole slew of just dead-end leads and just false tips, but sometimes it's really your best option to just turn to the public when you have no other leads to follow. And looking at why, like, serial killers and trophies, it makes perfect sense that they would represent 11 victims, considering especially the fact that when he writes "We Are One," oftentimes they will take trophies in order to just have complete possession of their victims, even in the afterlife, because the main motivation that serial killers have is a deep-seated desire for domination, manipulation, power, and control, which they feel like they don't have, and also have deep-seated low worth in themselves. So it's these two conflicting sense of both seeking, wanting power, but also feeling very inferior, and sometimes if they're narcissistic, they also feel grandiose, and they're constantly conflicting with each other. And it really does affect how they perform their crimes. In some of the cases, they take trophies in order to either A, relive their crime and relive the fantasy and the pleasure that it gave them, as well as to maintain that same sense of control over their victim even after death. So it's basically the biggest power and control that they can get. It reminds me of this one scene in the Netflix original series, Mindhunter. It's a really great show. If you have not watched it, I greatly recommend it. Where this one actor who's playing Ed Kemper just goes, "I couldn't have those girls in real life, so I killed them, and they were with me in spirit." And it's basically that same thing, that he feels that they are together with him in spirit, even in death. David Berkowitz reflected similar views in his letters to the authorities and the public when he was in his killings career. But anywho, to wrap up, the FBI is asking for tips to lead to more victims, kind of like what they're doing with hoping to identify victims from portraits of Samuel Little. And they have a tip line where you can go to their website or call them. That is about it for today. You can now continue on with the articles or exit out. If you get a chance to watch the 48 Hours episode, if you haven't already, please also feel free to find that in the episode description. I've been your host, Porter Hymas. Thank you for joining me on this latest episode of Killer News. Have a good day.
FBI unveils new evidence in serial killer Israel Keyes case, to air on 48 Hours. Friday, May 8, 2020, 5:23 p.m. AKDT. Updated, Friday, May 8, 2020, 8:40 p.m. AKDT. By John Thompson. FBI unveils new evidence in serial killer Israel Keyes case, to air on 48 Hours. An upcoming episode of 48 Hours dives into never-before-seen evidence from the FBI in their search to identify victims of serial killer Israel Keyes. The 34-year-old kidnapped Samantha Koenig in February 2012 from an Anchorage espresso stand where she worked as a barista. 6 weeks after the kidnapping, Keyes was arrested in Texas for debit card fraud. He would eventually tell investigators that he killed Koenig, dismembered her body and hid her remains in Matanuska Lake. "This is a case as haunting as anything I have ever covered," said veteran CBS investigative reporter Peter Van Sant, who was shown the evidence by the FBI for the episode. Keyes would never make it to trial, as he died by suicide in an Anchorage jail cell. Before he took his life, Keyes admitted to at least three other murders, Bill and Lorraine Currier in Vermont and Deborah Feldman in New York. Investigators believe that Keyes had at least seven other victims because of comments he made while incarcerated, and evidence retrieved from his jail cell which was shown to Van Sant. "The FBI revealed to us for the very first time, publicly, the hand paintings that Israel Keyes did in his jail cell using his own blood of 11 skulls," said Van Sant, of images that will be featured on Saturday's episode. "You look at these images and they had eyes looking back at you. Each skull had a slightly different characteristic to it. One of them was small, which made us wonder, and nobody really knows if he had killed a child, and they represent, the FBI's convinced, the 11 victims that we know of. But there's a lot of speculation, there may be far more. Van Sant says the FBI revealed this evidence to 48 hours with hope that the public can help lead investigators in solving missing persons cases across the country. The FBI also revealed what Keyes referred to as kill caches, essentially killing kits which he would stash and bury. Inside he would put a handgun, ammunition, zip ties, Van Sant said. In sum, he put Drano the FBI believes to potentially dissolve a body. Van Sant says that 48 hours visited the home where Keyes grew up in northeastern Washington, an off-the-grid building with no electricity or running water. He was joined by two of Keyes' former friends, who belonged to the same church group that preached white supremacy. Keyes' former friends talk about Keyes hunting, and he told them one time that he loved to kill anything with a heartbeat, Van Sant relayed. And he would shoot an animal like a deer and not kill it with the bullet, and he enjoyed coming up and he would tell stories of opening the animal up and holding its beating heart. It's believed the first assault Keyes committed was in 97 or 98, when he tried to abduct an Oregon woman. She's the only person the FBI believes that actually survived. She managed to talk her way out of this and she survived that, Van Sant said. And the question is, since he went all over the country and drove thousands of miles, is whether or not there are many more victims that we just don't know about. Tracking the Murders of Israel Keyes airs on KTVA Channel 11 this Saturday, May 9, at 9 p.m. What do skulls drawn in Israel Keyes' blood mean? The FBI reveals evidence for the first time as they try to identify victims of a notorious serial killer. 2020. May 8. By Peter Van Sant and Chris O'Connell. 48 hours and correspondent Peter Van Sant get the first look at never-before-seen evidence in the FBI search to identify victims in tracking the murders of Israel Keyes. During the course of 48 hours investigation into the murders of serial killer Israel Keyes, the FBI promised to reveal important details never before made public. When producers Chris O'Connell, Anthony Venditti, and I entered a meeting room at the Anchorage, Alaska FBI field office, we didn't realize just how unnerving that promise would be. One by one, FBI Special Agents Jolene Gooden and Catherine Nelson began placing sheets of paper before us. Each sheet featured a haunting, hand-painted image of a human skull, with eyes looking back at us. The artist? Israel Keyes. The paint he used? His own blood. Skulls, drawn by serial killer Israel Keyes in his own blood, were found under his bed in his jail cell. The FBI is making them public for the first time. It is believed Keyes killed 11 people, as represented by the 11 skulls. From left, FBI Special Agents Catherine Nelson and Jolene Gooden with 48 hours. He drew a series of 11 skulls, Gooden said. These skulls are drawn in blood and these were found underneath his bed in his jail cell. And one of them says, "We are one. We believe that 11 is the total number of victims." Keyes secretly painted the skulls in his jail cell. They were discovered before he committed suicide in that same cell, in December 2012. The FBI believes Keyes' killing spree stretched from Vermont to Alaska, likely between 2001 and 2012. In recorded interviews, Keyes says he chose people to murder completely at random. "Once I started, you know, there was nothing else like it," he told an interrogator. "It was very disturbing, but also very saddening to know that that many people were victims to his crimes," Special Agent Nelson said solemnly. "I think he took pleasure in doing it." The FBI has described Keyes as one of the most meticulous serial killer in American history. He buried or hid large plastic containers that he called kill caches in at least four states. 48 hours was the first news operation to be shown the contents of one of Keyes' caches. Among the things inside was a handgun, a homemade silencer, ammunition, and zip ties. A Home Depot bucket filled with weapons and tools recovered from the Blake Falls Reservoir in Adirondack Park in Parrishville, New York. The FBI believes Keyes buried caches like this throughout the U.S. If a member of the public finds one, the FBI says so to not touch it. Call the FBI at 1-800-CALL-FBI or visit https://www.fbi.gov/tips. He needed all of this to do what he wanted to do. And that was ultimately to sexually assault and to kill, Gooden said. One person that Keyes admitted abducting and killing was Samantha Koenig, 18, of Anchorage, Alaska. On the night of February 1, 2012, investigators say Keyes dove through an open window of a roadside espresso stand where Samantha worked. The dramatic leap was captured on security camera video. Keyes fled to the lower 48 and began a long road trip to Texas. Along the way, Keyes used Samantha's ATM card, which was being closely monitored by law enforcement. A picture from an ATM camera showed his rental car in the background. That mistake helped authorities track him down in Texas, where he was arrested in March of 2012 and extradited back to Alaska, where Keyes owned his own construction business. Over the next 7 months, Keyes teased investigators, giving out some details of three other murders. "The information that I still have could come in handy," Keyes chuckled in one interview. It's been 7.5 years since Keyes died. The FBI is hoping our 48 hours report will encourage people to come forward and help them solve other cases. All the victims that we don't have identified. That what this case is all about, Gooden said. Special Agent Catherine Nelson says the case remains open. It won't be easy by any means, Nelson said. And it may take a long time. But I'll never give up trying. With the public's help, the FBI hopes to one day attach a name to each of the skulls that Keyes painted. If you have any information that be of interest to authorities, please call the FBI at 1-800-CALL-FBI, or report tips online. FBI releases images of Israel Keyes skull drawings in hopes of identifying more possible victims. Israel Keyes, a serial killer who confessed to murdering 11 people across the United States, took his own life before the majority of his victims could be identified. By Gina Tron. The Federal Bureau of Investigation has released new evidence in a serial killer case in hopes that more of his victims can be identified. 11 drawings of skulls that serial killer Israel Keyes made with his own blood were revealed on a Saturday episode of CBS 48 Hours. While in prison, he made the gruesome creations, which investigators believe represent the amount of victims he killed, 11. FBI Special Agent Catherine Nelson said on 48 Hours that the drawings show that there are 7 victims we don't have identified. Keyes had confessed to murdering 11 people across the United States between 2001 and 2012, but only 3 of his victims have been identified. He admitted to breaking into the home of Bill, 49, and Lorraine Currier, 55, of Essex, Vermont in 2011. He tied them up and drove them to an abandoned farmhouse where he shot Bill and then sexually assaulted Lorraine before strangling her to death. He also admitted to killing Samantha Koenig, 18, in 2012, not far from where he lived in Alaska. He abducted her from the coffee booth where she worked before sexually assaulting, killing, and dismembering her. Keyes was caught shortly after. He died by suicide in his cell in late 2012. Before taking his own life, Keyes told investigators that he'd travel from state to state for the sole purpose of killing. While doing so, he claimed he targeted everyone, old couples, young people, men, young women. He'd bury kill caches in states so that he could go back and kill and dispose of the bodies with ease. He managed to evade capture for years simply by switching up his methods, locations, and targets. Examples of these kill caches were shown on Saturday's episode of 48 Hours. FBI agents stated in the show that they believe more kill kits are buried around the country and that they could very well contain evidence in other unsolved murders. One of his kill kits was a Home Depot bucket filled with guns, tools, and zip ties. Images of his kill kits, as well as a map of where he traveled, were previously released by the FBI in 2013. Investigators noted on Saturday's show that victims could be anywhere Keyes traveled. He traveled everywhere from Washington State to Florida to Colorado to Maine. Nelson noted on 48 Hours that the FBI is dedicated to finding clues leading to other victims. She is optimistic that they will. It won't be easy by any means, Nelson said. And it may take a long time. But I'll never give up trying. FBI agents discussed theories about other possible victims on Saturday's show, including their speculation that Keyes abducted New Jersey woman Deborah Feldman in 2009 before burying her in another state. During Keyes' interviews with investigators, he often bragged about taking victims to a different state to conceal their body to avoid getting caught. The skull drawings have been unveiled to the public, along with a reminder of what the kill kits look like, in hopes that they may trigger information. Anyone with information on the Keyes case is urged to call the FBI at 1-800-CALL-FBI. Tips can also be submitted online at https://www.fbi.gov/tips.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Murderous Literature. For more content and notifications of new episodes, please subscribe to our podcast on Spotify or Anchor. You can also find us on Instagram at SerialKillers0011 or on YouTube under the name SerialKillersThePowerPoint. Please join us next time for more Murderous Literature, and until then, please, don't die. Murderous Literature was created and hosted by Porter Hymas and January Blackwell. Produced by and occasionally guest starring Danielle McKay. Thank you to close friends and family for supporting this podcast. Some of the views expressed on this podcast are completely opinionated and are not intended to cause harm or offense. And some information presented on this podcast may change with time or be up for debate. All original content mentioned in this podcast belongs to the original owners, and rights are reserved. Murderous Literature was produced and created on Anchor.